Reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Hanti Leela Chapter 6. This is the story. In our teachings from Lord Chaitanya, we have lessons and stories and lessons. So this is the story of Raghunath Das and the Muslim tax collector. Hena kale mulukera ekam lacha adhikari saptagrama mulukera say hi chaudhari. Chaudhari. Chaudhari means tax collector. At that time there was a Muslim official collecting the taxes of the village of Saptagram. Because 500 years ago West Bengal and a lot of North India was under the control of the Muslims for many hundreds of years, actually. They're running North India. Hiranyadasa Muluka Nila Makrari Kariya Tara Adhikara Gela Marise Dekiya. Raghunath Das's uncle, his name was Hiranyadas. Interesting, Hiranya means gold. And we say Hiranyakashipu. Hiranya means gold and Kashipu means, let's say, mattress. So Hiranyakashipu was very full of money and sleeping, or anything else that goes on over there. So his uncle, Hiranyadas, he made an agreement with the government to collect taxes. The Muslim chaudhari, or tax collector, having lost his position, became extremely envious of him. So apparently, there was some other man, some Muslim, was the chaudhari, and he was collecting taxes from all the people, all the Hindus or whomever was living there in West Bengal, and then giving the money to the emperor. So then Raghunath Das's uncle said, listen, I'll collect, how much is he giving you, the emperor? And then he said, look, I'll give you more if you make me the tax collector. Because he figured out that the Muslim tax collector was keeping a good amount in his pocket. So he said, all right, listen, you give me the job, I'll collect the taxes, and I'll give you more. So naturally the emperor said, okay, you do it. Well, either way, if you don't do it, then you can get cut, right? So now, Varalaksh Deya Rajai Sade Bishalaksh Bishalak Se Turak Kichuna Pana Hoila Pratipaksh. Hiranya was collecting 2 million coins, and therefore he should have delivered 1,500,000 to the government. Instead, he was only giving 1,200,000, thus making an extra profit of 300,000 gold coins. Imagine what kind of wealth they had. This is only 500 years ago. This is a fact. This is not Lord of the Rings or some kind of, I don't know, what do you call it, science fiction or some imaginary book, you know, The Hobbit or Moby Dick or something. This is actually a historical account. This has really happened. It's 500 years ago. And now in India, the coins are made out of iron. You get this rupee coin, it's iron and it's dipped in aluminum. It's a little bit of aluminum on the outside. It's an iron coin. They throw them in the Radhakund, and the boys have a magnet. The little boys have a magnet with a string, and they throw the magnet in the water, and they pull all the coins up with the magnet. So that means it's iron. It's mostly the coin is made of iron. Now we have a rupee coin is iron, piece of iron, piece of steel. And 500 years ago, in one little place in Saptagram, in West Bengal, in India, and this one local emperor was getting, they were collecting 2 million gold coins. So much wealth. So the Turkish chaudhari became his rival. The former tax collector became a rival. Rajagari Kaipiyat Diya Ujire Anila Hiranyadasa Poilaya Ragnatera Bandila. He sent a secret account to the government treasury. The chaudhari bought the minister in charge. The chaudhari came wanting to arrest Hiranyadas, but Hiranyadas had left home. Therefore, the chaudhari arrested Raghunath Das. See what had happened? Raghunath Das, he was visiting his uncle, apparently, or maybe they all lived in the same house, joint family. Raghunath Das's father, Govardhan, and his uncle, Hiranya. So now the Muslim came to bust the Hindu tax collector, Hiranyadas. And then he couldn't find him. So then he arrested his nephew, Raghunath Das. And while Raghunath Das was under custody, Pratidini Raghunate Karaye Bharatsana Bapa Jaitari Ana Nahi Paiva Yatan. Every day the Muslim would chastise Raghunath Das and tell him, "Listen, bring your father and his elder brother, otherwise you will be punished." Marite Anaye Jadi Deki Raghunate Madapire Jayatabe Napare Marite. The Chaudhari wanted to beat Raghunath, but as soon as he saw Raghunath's face, his mind changed and he could not beat him. So this is called Prabhav. Prabhav means influence. That influence, people can influence one another by their words, by their physical strength, by their economic strength, by intimidation, physical intimidation, you can influence someone. Like you tell someone, "If you don't do this, I'll beat you." Like when you have a boss, you're working for someone, he says, "Listen, you don't do this, you're fired. You're working for someone." So we can influence people in different ways. By our words, by our position, by our money, by fear. So here, this is called the physical prabhav, that Raghunath Das is influencing this Muslim tax collector, Chaudhary, simply by his face. Because as Prabhupada told us, the face is the index of the mind. If you want to measure the temperature of the body, then you stick a thermometer in the mouth and you can measure what's going on inside the body in terms of heat. Is a person overheated? Is he too cool? Is he too hot? Is he just right? So that's called thermometer, measuring instrument to measure heat. And so the face, as Gurudev said, Guruji said, is also a meter, a measuring instrument to indicate the position of the heart and mind. What is a person thinking of? What is a person feeling? If a person is happy, if their mind is happy or their heart is happy, then they're smiling and there's a certain glow in their eyes, or maybe they're tired. It can indicate something. The face tells a lot. And if you're trained in doctor, there's something called physiognomy. Physiognomy means the study of the body. Like we have body language, which indicates sometimes a person's emotions, the way they stand or the way they move and this and that. No, if someone moves their body in a certain way, it indicates whether they like you or they don't like you, or they really like you or they really don't like you. Just by the way they position their body or cross their legs or move their arms. So many things. There's whole books like this, which we studied in college. But more specifically, the face is studied in medicine, because the different regions of the face indicate different areas of the body. The kidneys, underneath the eyes indicates the position of the kidneys, and the forehead, lines in the forehead indicate the position of the liver or different organs. What to speak of iridology. Iridology is the study of the iris. This is quite an interesting science. The iris means the colored part of the eye. And usually in India it's brown. Not much choice there. But and maybe in China and these places, many parts of the world, they have brown eyes and more tropical areas. But in a cooler area, they usually have cooler eyes, cooler color, like blue or green or like this. So that colored part of the eye is divided into different sections. Actually, it's divided into 360 degrees. And different parts, different degrees of the eye are related to different organs of the body. So if you study with a magnifying glass or even study with the human eye, you look at a person's eye and the colored part, and you see there's different like squiggles or type of lines, or little circle, then it indicates, oh, this person has a chronic problem with his pancreas or his heart. It's very, very accurate. It's called diagnosis, diagnosing the internal health of the body. Very ancient science, probably Indian, I suppose, originally. The same thing with the face. The face is literally the index of the physical health. Puffiness in the cheeks or so many things. Anyway, it's not a medical class. But the idea is that this Raghunath Das, his mind and heart were always fixed on Lord Chaitanya. He was always meditating Lord Chaitanya and always serving Radha and Krishna's heart. So he was a devotee. He was a devotee of the Lord. Pure devotee, Shuddha Bhakta. So because he was absorbed in Krishna, and Krishna's Anandamayi, Vyasat, Krishna is made of Ananda. Ananda means absolute, concentrated joy, saturated bliss, compact happiness, or compact bliss, Sanjananda Visheshatma. So he's meditating on Krishna and Radha. So he has, there's a natural happiness. I remember in the early days in the 60s when we were in college, many people were taking drugs. Of course, they're also doing now. Maybe more people. But at least in the West, it was quite a lot of young people. And people would get what they call high. They would get in some high state of being or whatever. And then they would say, and then some people wouldn't take any drugs, but they would be naturally high. And so he's natural high. He's naturally high. He's in good spirits. So this is the devotee. The devotee is naturally high. Because the nature, the actual nature of svabhav, svabhav means nature, your own bhav, your own feel, your own liking. Svabhav means what do you actually like in the core of your heart. And materialistic people and conditioned souls, those who are forgetful of God and those that are covered by illusion, those that are actually covered by illusion and ignorance, their nature is to enjoy the material world. That is their what they think. It's called the covered nature, svabhav. My own liking, svabhav, my own liking. What do I really like? What am I attracted to? What is natural for me? So in conditioned state, when one is in illusion or ignorance, he likes all wrong things. He likes all materialistic things. He likes the body. He likes material bodies. He likes material objects. He likes the material world. This is false. This is a temporary nature. This is a covered nature. But when one becomes self-realized, when one realizes God, and one realizes his own self, his own Atma, when he realizes the soul, what we call the soul or the Atma, then there's another nature. There's a purified nature. Svabhav means as our body has likings, oh, my tongue likes this, my eyes like that, my ears like this, my hands like that, and all material things. All of our material senses have a natural liking for material objects. A man likes to see a woman. A woman likes to see a man. A man likes to hear a woman's voice. A woman likes to hear a man's voice. These are all objects of the senses. Man's eyes, woman's eyes, man's ears, woman's ears. These are material senses and material objects. But when one is existing or realizes that, wait a minute, there's more than the body. I am something more than the body. I exist beyond the body. There's me and there's my body. Me and my body. We say, this is my body. My nose, my head, my hand. Well, who am I? Who is the I? The I is the Atma. The I is the soul. The soul may be feminine, the soul may be masculine. The soul is actually neuter in one sense. The soul is actually prakriti, his energy. The soul belongs to God. God is the enjoyer and the soul is the enjoyed. So when one realizes his eternal nature, his eternal identity as a spirit soul, an eternal spiritual soul, eternal individual spiritual being, then he understands, I have a different nature. I have a different nature. Then your svabhav, it becomes your divya svabhav, your transcendental nature. So then, all of a sudden, what was so interesting to us, and what was so necessary for us, and what was so important for us, becomes unnecessary, unimportant, and uninteresting. In other words, the whole material world becomes dull, boring, colorless, pale, distasteful for one who awakens his spiritual identity. And that identity is eternal. Jivera Sarupaya, this Sarup, the Jiva Sarup, the form of the Atma, the eternal form of my eternal form, my spiritual form. So then we have a different interest. We're interested, we become, our nature, our own nature becomes transcendental, becomes spiritual. And we still have, in the spiritual form, which is different than the material form, in the spiritual form we also have objects for our vision. We also have sounds for our ears. We also have tastes for our tongue and objects to touch with our hands. But they're all transcendental. They're all spiritual. When we become self-realized, when we realize the soul, then we have eyes. The soul has eyes. The soul has ears. The soul has a nose. The soul can see. The soul can smell and touch and feel everything. That is the whole basis of reality. The basis of reality is consciousness. If there's no consciousness, there's no existence. And so this consciousness, this awareness, this conception that I exist, this consciousness, is coming from the soul. So as this consciousness takes shape and expresses itself through this material body, this same consciousness, which is me, expresses itself and takes shape in a spiritual body. That's what it means to be self-realized, to realize that I exist separate from my material body, and as I have a material body, I have a spiritual body. Now I think I have a material body. I am Vietnamese. I am Hindu. I am Christian. I am Buddhist. I am Indian. I am American. This is called false identity. This is called illusion. Because this identity, this is temporary. Now you're Vietnamese. Next life you may be Chinese. Or next life you may be Indian. Or you may be French. This is changing identities. But what's not changing is me, the consciousness, the awareness, the understanding, the conception that I exist. So when we exist on a spiritual platform, then we realize, yes, the objects for my spiritual eyes are God, the form of God, God's devotees, and what I want to hear, I don't want to hear about material things, sports and politics and movies and what else is there? sports, politics, movies. The weather. I'm not so much interested in these material sounds, these material subjects. I become interested in spiritual subjects. What is going on in the spiritual world? Who are the members of the spiritual world? What are they doing? How are they interacting? Because now we're interested in this material world. When we become self-realized, we become interested in the spiritual world. And the objects of all of our senses become spiritual. And now we want to listen to music of this world. And there's so many varieties of music produced in this material world. Disco and mood music and love songs and opera and this, that. I don't know, so many types of music. But then we become interested in hearing the songs from the spiritual world. The chanting and the mantras and the songs glorifying the Lord and the songs about the spiritual world. Still we're listening to music, but it's spiritual music. Because God is the center. So, as one absorbs his mind and heart in spiritual activities, his face takes on a certain radiance. His face takes on a certain glow. His face takes on a certain peacefulness that is not seen or perceived in the material world. People, and even an ordinary materialist, if he meets a devotee, he can understand if he's slightly sensitive. If he's even slightly sensitive, if he's a gross materialist, really covered by ignorance, then he can't perceive anything. He can't even see himself, or to speak of see someone else. But if someone is sensitive, and they meet a devotee, or a self-realized person, they'll say, oh, there's something different about you. What are you doing? You're doing some fasting? You're doing some fasting, or you're vegetarian, or you're eating some special food, or... What is it about you? There's something different about you. And then the person will say, well, I'm trying to remember Krishna. Or as I mentioned in one other class, people ask, they say, they meet you on the train, they say, oh, you're a Hare Krishna, you're engaged in bhakti yoga, you're spending your time in these spiritual pursuits, spiritual activities. So, are you happy? Does it make you happy? Because this is the basic common denominator. This is the common factor of every culture of the world. Every culture of the world, every human being, and every planet Everybody's moving for the same reason. Everyone is existing for the same reason. Everyone is working for the same reason. Everyone is existing for the same reason. What is that reason? To be happy. Everyone wants to be happy. This is universal. You go in any place in the world and ask any man, woman, or child, what do you want? And after they get finished of saying car and house and wife and husband, all these things, and then they'll say, well, what, after all these objects that you're talking about, you only want all these objects because you think that by having these various objects or people in your life, you think these objects or people, if they're in your life, they will give you happiness. It's not the car you want, it's the happiness the car gives you. It's not the wife you want, it's the happiness you think the wife will give you. It's not the husband you want, it's the happiness you think the husband will give you. So the bottom line or the basic necessity of what people are looking for is happiness. So that's usually the common question. Someone sees you're doing something different than they are. They're doing something, material life, working so hard and doing whatever they're doing, and they're also looking for happiness. And they see that you're doing something different, slightly different. So they say, oh, your action is different than mine. Your activities are somewhat different. And you even appear maybe somewhat different, although that's not the criterion to look different. But your activities are obviously different. You're a vegetarian. I'm not a vegetarian. You're doing all the spiritual activities. I'm simply making money. So I'm active, and I'm working, and you're active, and you're working. So what you're doing, is it producing happiness? Because that's what I'm doing, all what I'm doing for happiness. And everyone's doing whatever they're doing for happiness. So naturally, that's the natural question someone asks you. Oh, you're doing something different. Is it giving you happiness? You feel happy? They ask you. So then you can simply say, you can say yes. But better that you tell them. You say, what do you think? In other words, they're asking you, are you happy? Then I say, well, what do you think? What do you feel? You look at me, and you think I'm happy or what? And then it's subjective. I mean, rather it's subjective. It's otherwise I can say, oh yeah, I'm happy. I can put on a fake smile. I'm very happy. Yes, I'm very happy. But I'm dying inside of, you know, cancer or something, or I'm or whatever. Most morose and unhappy person in the world, but you can say I'm happy. Of course, that's what most people do. Most people are the most unhappy and morose and disturbed people in the world. But when they greet each other, they say, yes, I'm very fine, thank you. How are you? Hello. Hello. How are you? Oh, fine, thank you. How are you? I'm fine. Bilkul tik. Bilkul tik rahega. Ah, badia. What badia? What badia? One Agarwal will greet the Agarwal. One Agarwal has 7 days to live. He's dying of cancer. And he greets the other Agarwal. Oh, Mr. Agarwal, how are you doing? Oh, badia, badia, bilkul tik. Badia, badia. Very good. I'm very, very good. But he's dying, going to die in 5 days. So he says, it's only a line. It's not the actual, there's no substance. So in this Raghunath Das, there was so much substance. His heart was absorbed in spiritual activities. His mind was absorbed in spiritual activities. Therefore, such internal absorption showed its effect on his face externally. So now this Muslim, and Muslims, anyone who eats meat, actually anyone who eats meat, they're actually very cruel. They can't help but be cruel. At one time or another, or at all times, they must be cruel. Because meat is produced by cruelty. And whatever you associate with, that quality you take on. Consciously or unconsciously, knowingly or unknowingly. So a chicken or a goat or a cow or a pig or whatever, bird, whatever. These animals, they're killed. And they're conscious beings. They're living entities, like we are, but in different form. So when they're killed, they're very frightened. They're very afraid. And they're full of fear and anxiety. And all that fear and all that anxiety is in their mind, and that goes into their blood, and that goes into their meat, and you kill that animal and eat that animal to live on. So people that are non-vegetarian, they're very cruel by nature, because their very existence is made of cruelty, right? Because to live on, to eat animals, you have to be so cruel. So much cruelty and violence is in the activity. So then all that cruelty and violence comes into you. So in your basic dealings, your basic thinking, there's always a touch of cruelty or hardness or selfishness or meanness or violence in your speaking and your thinking and your acting. You can't help it. The more you eat meat, the more your being will be like this. Because this is, that's why these animals, these lions and tigers, these meat-eating animals, they're very cruel. They're vicious. They just, you know, that's their nature. Their nature, it's like a cycle. They eat animals, they viciously murder other animals, and then that comes into them, and then the animal's so fearful when he dies in their jaws, so all that fear and cruelty and violence comes back to them when they eat the meat. So it's like perpetuating. So human beings aren't meant to be like that. So now, this Muslim who's eating, generally they're meat eaters, and just here you have a Muslim and a Hindu. Raghunath Das is a Hindu, he's a pure vegetarian, and he's a devotee of the Lord. So he's very pure in mind and heart, and he's absorbed in the blissful meditations on Radha and Krishna. So his face is so pretty, so beautiful, so peaceful, so tranquil, so effulgent. And so even this cruel person who's ready to beat him, and obviously this indicates that he's cruel to begin with, because this person he's arrested, first of all, is innocent. He's only the nephew of the culprit. The culprit is the uncle, Hiranyadas, who has misappropriated some gold coins, 300,000 coins. And so since the Muslim Chaudhary couldn't find his uncle to imprison, he grabbed him instead. He said, well, wait a minute. Now he's ready to beat him. So for a person to think like that, or even contemplate acting like that, beating him, that means he's cruel. Right? He's cruel or violent. He's a young boy, you're going to beat him. But nevertheless, despite all that cruelty and violence within him, as soon as he saw the face of this devotee, Raghunath Das, then he changed his mind. I can't beat you. So this is called prabhav, this is called influence. A devotee has so much influence. If someone simply sees their face, they become changed. They become changed. That's the whole principle of India we're discussing today about darshan. Everybody wants to go have darshan of a saintly person. Darshan means to see, to look, to see the face of a saintly person. What to speak of, hear from them. So the Muslim's having darshan of Raghunath Das, and he's saying, I'm going to beat you. I can't. So he starts, he raises a stick or raises his hand, and then his mind changed, and he could not beat him. Vishesh says, Vishesh kayasta budye antre karidar, Mukhe tarje garje marite sabayantar. Indeed, the Chaudhary was afraid of Raghunath Das, because Raghunath Das belonged to the Kayast community. Although the Chaudhary would chastise him orally, or verbally, he was afraid to beat him. So it said he was afraid because his father, Raghunath Das's father, was a member of a big business class. Very rich father is also very wealthy, so he was also hesitating. The Chaudhary tax collector was hesitating to beat him because he thought he may get some reaction. Tabe Raghunatha kichu chintila upai vinati koriya kai same lecha pai. While this was going on, Raghunath Das thought of a tricky method of escape. Well, that's natural. If you're in captivity, you're always thinking of how to escape. Thus he humbly submitted his plea at the feet of the Muslim Chaudhary. Mlecha Pai. Mlecha Pai. Pai means feet. Paya. So now Raghunath Das is very clever. Of course, he's coming in a business community. And they're also very clever. Businessmen are very clever. But he's also a devotee, so he's even more clever. Amara pita jeta hayatamara duibai bai bai itamara kalaha kara sarvadai. He said, listen, he's telling, my dear sir, my father and his elder brother are your brothers. And brothers always fight about something. Duibai, tamara duibai. So, how they become brothers, that we have to think about. But somehow Raghunath Das is trying to present this, that my two Hindu, my father and his brother, who are Hindus, are your brother. It's quite a funny thing. Kabu kalaha kabu priti ihara nishchay noi. Kalipunatina voi haiva ekatani. Sometimes brothers fight among themselves. This kalaha means fighting. And sometimes they have very friendly dealings. There is no certainty when such changes will take place. This is mentioned another place in Chaitanya Charitamrita called Prem Kalaha. And sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Jagannath Das or Jagannanda Pandit, they would fight. Different arguments, and when they were in Puri. It was all like a lover's quarrel. And this deity of Sakshi Gopal, he was recovered by the king of Puri as the spoils of war. The king of Puri defeated some king in South India. The deity was originally in South India. He had gone there from Vrindavan, actually, Sakshi Gopal. Then the king of Puri defeated that South Indian king. He was in Vidyanagar. And he brought the deity of Sakshi Gopal to Puri. And he was living in the same temple, Jagannath. And what was happening is when they were making offerings to Jagannath, and Sakshi Gopal was eating them all. So then Jagannath appeared in a dream to the king in the head pujari, and he said, "Listen, this is Sakshi Gopal. This is Gopal. He eats all my sweets." And so they was described they were having a prem kalaha. Lord Jagannath and Sakshi Gopal were having a prem. These are two lords. They're having a prem kalaha, a lover's quarrel. So then the king arranged to move Sakshi Gopal about 10 kilometers north, and he built a temple for him, and even there's a train stop. There's a railway train stop there coming from Calcutta to Jagannath Puri called Sakshi Gopal. There's a famous deity there, Sakshi Gopal. That's the witness Gopal. He was in Vrindavan. His temple is still there. It's kind of broken down. Maybe it's not. I haven't seen in years because the temple's been empty for about 400 years. But the temple is right nearby Govindaji in Vrindavan. And it's a long story you must have heard. The deity who walked across India. So he walked across India and he went to a place called Vidyanagar, which is in South India. And the Net King was defeated in fight by the Utkal King. And the deity was moved from Vidyanagar to Puri. And then he was again moved. So this is mentioned here. He's saying that they have a lover's quarrel. They have a quarrel. Sometimes brothers fight among themselves and sometimes they have priti, kabu priti. They have very loving dealings. There is no certainty when such changes will take place. Thus, I am sure that although today you are fighting, tomorrow you three brothers will be sitting together in peace. A very clever speech. Raghunath is saying, my uncle and my father, who are Hindus, they're like your brothers. They're your brothers. Sometimes you fight, there's arguments. But why are you so disturbed? Ami jaiche pitara taiche tomara bhalak. Ami tamara palai tumi amara palak. Balak and palak. Just as I am my father's son, I am also yours. I am your dependent, and you are my maintainer. Tamara balak, amara palak. Tamara balak, amara palak. Palak means like Gopal. Gopal means maintainer. The maintainer of the cows. We sometimes say protector. But Palana Shakti is one of Krishna's 16 Shaktis. Palana means to maintain or to protect. Palana. So he's saying, you're my protector. Because he's saying, all you, my father and my uncle and you are all brothers. So therefore, you're my uncle. And I'm the son of my father. And so because you're so related to my father, you should think of me like your son. You should also maintain me. Palakhana paliera tarite na yuyai tumi sarva shastra jana jindi pira prai. Now he's saying, for a maintainer to punish a person he maintains is not good. You are expert in all the scriptures. Indeed, you are like a living saint. So as you know, in politics, there are four ways by which politicians control the opposition. One is called praising. It's called dividing one party from another, or sama, pacification or equalization, pacifying them, or danda means taking out the stick, beating them, samadan, giving some charity. So this bribing, dan means bribing. Bribing also means bribing someone with words. Oh, you're very intelligent. Oh, you're very expert. You're so good at this. I remember Jayananda when he used to engage these regular non-devotee people. He would engage young men in building and fixing the Jagannath cart. He was very expert at this praising Samadama Veda, like that. And he said, "Oh, you think you can help me? Do you know a little bit of painting? Can you help paint? We have to paint these carts every year, fresh paint, blue and red and yellow, green, all this." "Oh, yeah, I can help for a little bit." And then the person would start painting, and then Jayananda would say, "Oh, you're such an expert painter. Where did you learn? Did you go to school or you studied with some master painter? You're really doing a good job. You're really, really doing a good job." And he said it in such a way, he had so much love for Krishna and love to get Krishna's work done, and at the same time love for the jivas and very keen interest to engage them in devotional service. These were non-devotees, non-initiated, just people walking by on the street, college age young men. And then they would feel so good because he was so genuine about everything he did. And they would say, "Really, you think I'm doing a good job?" "Yeah, you're a really good painter." So then the guy feels so happy because everyone wants to be appreciated. This is the biggest problem in husbands and wives, that no one appreciates each other. The wife is saying, "Oh, this rascal, I do so much, he never even says thank you or anything." And then the husband is saying, "I work so hard and give her so much money, and she never does anything." So the husbands and wives are always like thinking, "No, no one's appreciating me. It's a big problem." So it's universal. Everyone feels they want some recognition, some acknowledgement, some recognition, some appreciation. This is nature, human nature. So he was expert at this. And then the person would feel so happy they would keep painting for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. All day long they would paint. And this way we would get the carts built and painted. Because we only had a couple devotees working, but we engaged all these other people. So now Raghunath Das, he's using the same technique because he's a like political type person. He's saying, Oh, Muslim Chaudhary, you know all the Shastras. He says, "Sarva Shastra Jan." Jana means like gyan or knowledge. You know all the scriptures. And of course, since you know all the scriptures, you also know that if you're maintaining someone, if someone is being protected by you and maintained, you shouldn't beat them. That's not quite correct. Eta shuni se malachara. First he tries to say that we're of the same kind, we're the same family, you're like my father, like my uncle. So that kind of softens them up. "Yes, actually I'm like your uncle. And I should maybe be nice to you." And then he says, "Besides, you're a living saint. Jinda pira prai." Prai means almost. Like we have this term Vaishnav prai. So someone who's a Kanishtha, whose tendency is to make so many offenses, he's called Vaishnav prai. Prai means almost a Vaishnav, or Prakrita Vaishnav, Prakrita Bhakta. He's a devotee of some sort, but his bhakti is mixed with so much prakriti, so much materialism, so much material energy. So he's called Prakrita Bhakta or Vaishnav Prai. He's not really a Vaishnav. One is a Vaishnav when he comes to the Madhyam level. A Madhyam, when he has the qualities of a Madhyam, then he's considered a Vaishnav starting. Otherwise, a Kanishtha is a Vaishnav in training. He's training or trying to become Vaishnav. So he says, Pira Prai. Jinda Pira Prai means, Praya means you're almost or just like a saintly person. So this is, everyone likes to be a saint. So this Muslim, he's thinking, "Oh wow, I thought I was only a lowly tax collector. I would just go around and threaten everybody, if you don't pay your taxes, the emperor is going to come here and burn down your fields and destroy your house. You better pay your taxes to the emperor." Oh, so tax collectors, they work on the basis of intimidation and fear. Everyone knows that. Right? The Indian Tax Department, what do they call it? The Tax Department. They also work on the basis of intimidation and fear. You don't pay your taxes, you go to jail, they arrest you. They take away your this and that, confiscate your house, they come in with the army or police. So people are very much afraid of the tax collector, tax man. They say that there are only two things in life that are sure for everybody. Everybody has to die, and everybody has to pay tax. Everything else is uncertain. Our relationships are uncertain. Our lifespan is uncertain. Everything is uncertain. But these things are sure, for sure, certain. Everyone must die and everyone has to pay taxes. Every time. Even a child goes and buys a candy, he has to pay taxes. Candy tax. Everything you buy, there's some tax on it. So even a child, when he buys something, he buys some string for his kite. He has to pay sales tax on the string. So even a child is paying taxes. No one escapes, right? You can't say, hey, come on, I'm a kid. Don't charge me tax. No, sorry. State sales tax, 7%. 7%? Or 15%, depends on where you are. It's ridiculous. So he's making him feel very, very good. So when the Muslim heard Raghunath Das's appealing voice, his heart softened. He began to cry, and tears glided down his beard. Eta shuni se malachera, mana ardahoila, dari wahi ashru pade, kandite lagila. His dari, wahi, flowing over his beard, ashru pade. Tears were flowing over his, it was a heart-rending scene. Raghunath Das, he touched the heart of this cruel tax collector. So even cruel people, they sometimes cry. So hard to believe. Sometimes somebody goes out and he's a professional killer, and he goes out and kills people for a living, mercilessly murders people for hire, for the mafia. Then he comes home and his little kid falls off his bicycle and hurts himself, and he cries. And the man is crying, oh, my son. He's crying over his son. When the weekend comes, he goes out, he's a hired killer, and he goes murder somebody in a restaurant. They come out of a restaurant, boom, and blows his head off with a, 4.57 Magnum or something. Five shots, boom, boom, boom. And he gets in the airplane and flies back to Bombay. Hired killers, right? So cruel and merciless. He just kills somebody in cold blood for hire, for money. But then his son gets hurt. Oh, my son. So even the cruelest person can have some sentiments. This is some of the amazing facets of life. Mlecha bale aji haite tumi mora putra. Aji chadaimo toma kari eka sutra. The Muslim Chaudhary, tax collector, told Raghunath Das, you are my son from this day on. Today, by some means, I shall have you released. So it worked. Raghunath Das, he was effective. His countenance, his face, his beautiful heart, and which was shown on his face, and his clever speaking influenced the mind of the Muslim. Ujire kahiyat kahiya Raghunathe chadila pritikari Raghunathe kahite lagila. After informing the minister, the Chaudhary released Raghunath Das and then began to speak with him, to him, with great affection. Tomara jeta nirbudhi ashtalak kai ami bhagi amare kichudi bhari judai. Your father's elder brother is near Budi. He's stupid. Right? Means less intelligent. He enjoys 800,000 coins. But since I am also a shareholder, he should give some portion to me. Jaha tumi tomara, jaitari milaha amare, jaimate bhalahaya karun varadilantane. Now, Raghunath, please go arrange a meeting between me and your uncle. Let him do whatever he thinks best. I shall completely depend on his decision. Raghunatha asitabe jaitare milaya mlacha sahita vasha kaila savashanta haila. Raghunath Das arranged a meeting between his uncle and the Chaudhary. The matter was settled and everything was peaceful. So this is how Raghunath Das was conducting himself while he was living at home. Because after he met Lord Chaitanya told him to stay at home, don't be crazy, man. Don't keep trying to run away, because Raghunath Das was trying to run away and join Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya said, the time is not right, but you live at home like an ordinary man and you carry on with your devotion internally in a quiet way. And by, Krishna will be pleased with you, and he will make arrangements for you to join me and become my eternal let's say, not eternal, but become my associate in Puri. So this is one of the dealings that he had to deal with while he was living at home. This is the kind of things that come up when you live at home. You get so much entangled in family matters. He was an innocent nephew, just sitting at home. Well, I can't say he was watching TV, but he was sitting at home and minding his own business, and all of a sudden this guy stomps down the door and arrests him and takes him to jail. So family life is so entangling, uncles and aunts and nephews. But when one comes to the site of devotion, one surrenders his life to Krishna, then life becomes a lot less complicated. Therefore, Prabhupada coined the term simple living and high thinking. A devotee's life it becomes very simple. We don't have to worry about Junior's birthday party and our uncle's anniversary and grandma's death and all these other so many complicating involving activities that family people are involved in. We can spend our time peacefully hearing and chanting about Krishna day and night. So that concludes the story of Raghunath Das and the Muslim tax collector. So from this story we can conclude that devotee never perishes. Krishna always protects his devotee. Krishna gives the devotee intelligence to speak in a very clever way, and he gives him mystic power. All devotees have special powers given by God. They can influence people to their advantage. And every devotee that's ever engaged, especially in the preaching mission, where it's very risky and you often meet policemen in unfavorable situations and circumstances, they all have their own individual experiences of how the Lord is arranging to protect them and free them from so many very dangerous situations. As Raghunath Das, he was freed from this incarceration by the Muslim tax collector by his clever speech. Because Krishna, it says, I am the intelligence of the intelligence. I am the strength of the strong. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Sarvasyacha hamriti sannivishto matasmatir gyanam apohanam cha. So Krishna gives intelligence to devotees. Knowledge, intelligence. How to speak, how to act, how to present oneself to get the job done, to carry on, peacefully execute Krishna consciousness. Well, this is we can take this lesson from this story. How even sometimes a devotee may be innocent, but he gets in a difficult situation. But that's only to test his devotion. Krishna is testing his devotion. And then Krishna, even though he's in a difficult situation, Krishna gives the intelligence and the means by which he can extricate himself from that entanglement. There's so many instances I remember in Sankirtan where policemen would be softened by the association with devotees. Initially arrest them and later release them. So it's like this. Krishna is always there for the devotee, always protecting him. So anyone has any question or comment on this story? Yes. Our Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, he made this statement. Exactly like this. He said, the face is the index of the mind. That's obvious. You have that experience. If your husband comes home and if he's angry, the anger will be on his face and you'll see, you'll look at his face. You won't put a thermometer, you don't put a thermometer in your husband's mouth to understand how he feels. Wait a minute, I don't know how you feel. Open your mouth. Acha. Oh, you're unhappy. You're 98% unhappy. You just see the face and you understand what is index of mind means. What is he feeling? Mind means thinking, feeling, willing. What is he thinking? What is he feeling? What does he want? So, and if he comes in, he's all like, his eyes are all just like that's how a mother knows when her son gets his first girlfriend. any mother, that she can understand. Every day my son goes to school. Every day he comes home. Every day he gets some snack from the refrigerator. And every day he talks a little bit. Then he goes to studies. And then he has his pattern. So his mother's quite aware of the boy's pattern. Then one day he comes home and he doesn't go get his snack, and he goes here and there. He's acting a little strange. And then the mother says, oh, Acha, he must have he's finally growing up. And he discovered that there's something in the world called girls. and he's become a young boy, and he has some interest in some girl at the bus stop or whatever. So now he's not interested in snacks or school or anything. So there's a change. And even she can see in his face, not only in his movements or activities. He comes in the door and she sees, and she can tell. There's a certain look. So the face, that's not a very mystical statement. The face is index of the mind. It's very eloquently stated by Srila Prabhupada, as everything he says is so eloquent, so perfect and profound. Because he's perfect. That's our guru. Our guru is Srila Prabhupada. So he's a perfect speaker. He's perfect in every way. So he says the face is the index of the mind. Index means how you measure. What's your question?
In all cases, like in
terms of
the face or some...
Huh? Well, I mean, if you're a good poker player, then you have to keep a straight face. Poker, you know, poker means cards, you know, you play cards. So it's even, they have a phrase in English called poker face. Poker is the type, you play bridge, you've heard of bridge, I think, in India, it's very popular, bridge and all these other, I don't know what they play. But poker is a type of card game, we have these cards, and everyone has a card to play the cards. So they have a phrase in English called poker face. Poker face means... It means that you don't know what he's thinking. He's like stone face. Stone face. You don't know whether he's got a good hand. He has a good hand in front of him, very good cards where he's going to win. And so therefore, that's why he's betting so much. So he just keeps no expression. No expression, cold, stone-like face. So then you can't read his face. Because if someone, when someone's dealing the cards, if someone gets good cards, then they'll go, They'll look at their cards and they'll say, oh, well, I got good cards. I'm going to really, so their face will change. So who's ever like playing the cards and organizing the betting, he'll say, oh, he has good cards. I better be careful. You know, he'll watch, because you always look at the face of whoever you're gambling with. Because the face indicates what he's thinking. So he's thinking, wow, I got this ace and I got this spade and this three aces and two kings and, well, I'm going to really, so the poker face is like, He has all winning cards in his hand, but he doesn't show anything. He's like, so the other guy's looking at his hand, because he can't see your hand, but he can see your face. Because you're holding your cards like this. That means your hand. So he's looking at you, and he's looking at you, and you're looking at him. And then you put one card down, and he puts another card down. And so you don't know. It's like really tension. But the guy goes, then you know, oh, this guy's got a big hand, so you're not going to bet anything big. Okay, 1 rupee. And you think, I say, oh my God, 1 rupee. 1 rupee, you know, 100 rupees. You say, no, I fold. Then you just take your cards and you fold. Fold means you quit. And so the guy wins 1 rupee and then you'll have to deal again. Of course, we don't play cards, but this is how it goes. You know, we don't gamble. Devotees don't gamble. So poker face is like this. So there are many people in the world, some businessmen and these kind of cheater type people, they can also conceal their emotions. Let's say it's the general rule that the face is the index of the mind. But that's also one of the qualities. There's another quality called dhira or sudhira. Sudhira means very sober. And that's the definition of sober is you don't know what a person is thinking. You can look up, and it's one of Krishna's qualities in Nectar Devotion, dhira. He has 64 qualities. One is dhira. A person who you cannot judge what their plan is, if you cannot judge or understand what a person's intention or plan is, or what's on his mind, it's called dhira. Very, very grave. Dhira is like, you don't know what he's thinking.
Yeah,
No, he was a mad. I mean, people thought that he was mad just because he wasn't wearing suit and tie, you know. Like anybody in India, if they go around without a suit and tie, they think you're mad. In America, they think you're mad if you wear a dhoti and a kurta. If you go out in this dhoti and a kurta, they think you're a crazy man. You came out of the hospital or something. You escaped from a nut house. And you just grabbed the bed sheet. You grabbed the bed sheet off the bed. You grabbed the bed sheet off the bed and you ran out of the nut house and wrapped it around your body. Look at this nutcase. He just came from an asylum, a psychiatric hospital. Nutcase. They say like that. Are you stupid? Are you wearing your bed sheet? Aren't you ashamed of yourself to be out in public in bed sheet? So the Jed Barrett, he was in bliss. He was Atmaram. He was totally absorbed in Brahman. Because they thought he was mad, because ordinarily, if someone passes urine on you, you'll get a little bit angry. If someone comes and passes urine on you, hey, what's it? But the kids, when he walked through the town, he'd walk through town, and the road is usually lower than the houses on the side of the road. Sometimes they raise, like, see, this is raised up, like this. So when you go to Barsana, you see that Brikma Marga Barsana goes through the town. It's at one level, but the houses are much higher. Sometimes the road is higher than the houses, or sometimes the other way. So in villages, it's more like this. You go around Brajmandal Prikama. As you go through villages, always the houses are higher than the road. Because the road becomes like the drain. When it rains, all the rain goes down the road and things like that. So if your house is higher. So when he was going through these little villages wandering, the boys would stand up in their verandas of their houses. They would just stand there, and then they would just, you know, chitrakol, haribol chitrakol. As everyone says in the village, all these little boys say, haribol chitrakol. Chitra in Brajvasa, chitra means your clothes, and kol means open. And haribol, all these little kids, when they go in the village, they say, you tell them, you want them to chant Hare Krishna, so you tell these Brajvasi boys, haribol, and they say, haribol chitrakol. Drop your drawers, drop your pants, open your pants. They're so fresh. These Brijbasi boys are really too much, you know. Chalak. Chalak? Chalak? Chalak. Chalak. So the boys would stand up there in front of their houses, and Jed Barrett walked by, and then they would pee on him. And so he wouldn't respond. He said, I'm not this body, what do I care? And so he didn't do anything that normal people do. Normal people wear clothes, normal people respond. Then they would come, and then when he walked by, they would turn around with their backside in front of his nose, and they would pass air. You know, pass there in front of his face. You know, it's like a horrible, offensive thing. But he would just be... So he wasn't responding the way any normal person would do. So then they said he was mad. He's a madman. So his face was... He was blissful. You know, he was always in bliss because he was thinking, I have nothing to do with this body. I'm fully identifying with myself. And myself is, by nature, I'm blissful. The very nature of the jiva is actually happiness. That is the nature. It's a natural thing. Just like it's natural, if you throw something up, it's going to come down because gravity is one of the forces acting in this world. It's the nature of an object. If you throw it up, then it comes down. But if you go up in outer space somewhere, you throw your hat up, it just keeps going up. You know, it just disappears and never comes back down because there's no gravity there. So it's actually the nature of the Atma, because the Atma is Ananda, to be happy. But all these coverings of the Atma, the covering of body, the covering of material body and mind,